100% owned and operated. The Shawnee Radio app. They said we couldn't do it, and we did it anyway. The hottest independent network in the world.
Kaboom!
Kaboom!
It's time to grow with the SEO queen. Get visibility like never before. Your traffic's gonna explode. It's time to grow with the SEO queen. Receive the perfect leads like never before. Your traffic's gonna explode. It's time to grow.
Welcome to the SEO Queen Tech Show, a podcast to help you get more credibility, visibility, and profitability through leveraging marketing insight and business wisdom. So this podcast is for entrepreneurs and businesses of all sizes. We are broadcast worldwide on Bashani Radio, iHeartRadio, and iTunes. Bashani Radio, always talking about everything from New York City. You can listen to the SEO Queen Tech Show on any mobile phone or tablet device. Also, please follow us online on all social platforms at the SEO Queen and visit us at our headquarters online at SEOQueen.com. And make sure you, as you're listening on your phone, you click over to Instagram and follow the SEO Queen for more great content. So my next guest is a phenomenal woman. She is an inspiring educator who firmly believes in humanity's boundless potential. As the visionary founder and CEO of Bright Places, Inc., she is a prominent strategic coach who leads this firm, and she specializes in leadership development, equity, and inclusion. She has been impactful in her career spanning over two decades, and she's only begun. She is a certified intercultural capacity coach, and she has influenced decision makers in their mindsets in the private, corporate, and government sectors. She hails from the vibrant city of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and she received her education at Arcadia University, where she obtained her Bachelor's of Arts in Communication and Journalism. She is also has earned a MBA in Human Resource Management. So when it comes to people, she is an expert people person. She is also the president-elect of the National Association of Business Owners for California. She is an alumni of the African American Board Leadership Institute and the Los Angeles African American Women's Public Policy Institute. And her exceptional accomplishments have earned her recognition as a nominee for the Los Angeles Business Journal's Women's Summit and the 2023 National Association of Women's Business Owners California Business of the Year nominee. And this has solidified her status as a notable figure in her field. Most recently, within the last month, she graduated and got her growth opportunity presentation, capstone presentation presented, where she became an alumni of the Goldman Sachs 10,000 Small Business Initiative. And I want to present to some and introduce to others, none other than LaBeta English MBA. How are you today?
I am very good, and thank you for having me, and I'm excited to be here.
Well, I have to tell you that I'm excited for our listeners to hear all the wisdom and expertise that you have to offer when it comes to leadership, because you are amazing. I remember sitting in class with you and we had some situations, and all the wisdom you had to say, I literally was like, wow, I did not think about it that way. So tell me, what do people get wrong about leadership?
Most people think about leadership as something that they are doing to make people move in a direction where they want them to go, in the sense of having to tell them to do it, you know? And what it really is about understanding and being able to pivot to the needs of the person you're leading. And so most people get it wrong. They think it's about them when it's really about the people you're leading.
So Break that down to me a little bit more. Understanding the needs of the people that you're leading. What does that mean, especially in 2024?
Yeah. So, as a leader or as any business owner or anyone that's leading an initiative, we're focused on outcomes. We want to win, in essence, whether it be profit, we're gaining more profit in a business, or we're helping more people in a community, right? And so, it's about the outcome. And there's lots of ways for people to get to an outcome. Yes, there's a strategic plan, but depending on who I'm working with, right, or who I'm leading, or who I'm speaking with, or who I'm guiding, or who I'm directing, it changes in terms of the approach I should use to get them to the goal, right? And so a lot of leaders, what they do, or people who call themselves leaders, I should say, what they do is they think that people are supposed to adhere to their way of thinking about an initiative or a program or a directive, rather than them thinking about how should I serve this person so that they can better reach their outcomes?
That's really interesting that you would say that because just being around you, I have to say that, I'm asking my team more questions and not assuming. I know I have one particular person on my team that, my first impulse was to kind of, react to what it is I asked them to do, but they weren't comfortable doing it. And when I asked more questions and peeled back the onion, I finally understood that they just did not have the confidence to do what it was I was asking.
A lot of what we need to do is ask. It takes a lot of self-reflection to be a leader, right? So sometimes, even with my own team, I'll think, well, what is it that's making them not understand what I need? So the first thing I do is I think, am I communicating effectively, right? And then I think, am I communicating in an effective way for this particular individual who I need to reach this goal? And so I'll go back and ask, what else did you is what didn't you understand, or what do you need from me in order for you to be able to achieve the goal? And I'm not saying that we don't have to give directives, because we do. Oftentimes we have to show people a product, or give them show them an example, for example, of what we want, because sometimes we're trying to still figure out as leaders, what exactly do I want here, or how do I want this presented? A lot of times leaders are very creative, very visionary, very mission focused. So there's a lot going on in our brains, and people don't know what you mean exactly. You see an outcome, but they don't. So a lot of self-reflection has to happen if you don't see that the outcome is aligned with what you want. Something happened along the communication path. Okay. And that means that I have to, again, self-reflect and think, what am I saying, right? That's making people not get to the outcome I desire.
Communication is huge. And what challenges do you find that leaders have in communicating effectively?
Yeah, so though the what I was explaining earlier about understanding people's ways of thinking or their needs or their style is very important. And it's also to understand that people have diverse perspectives, right? People bring diverse experiences to the workplace, right? So, like you said before, confidence. You talked about the person that you were speaking with didn't have confidence, right? That's why a big part of equity and inclusion is curiosity. We need to be curious as leaders, ask questions, because people bring past traumas, right, to the workplace. So there may be some disconnection with what you're trying to communicate and get them to do, and how they absorb the information. So I need to be curious. I need to ask questions. I need to make adjustments, right? And it's not easy. It's constantly thinking about the other person, right, in a way that's going to get us to the results, or help us to have a healthy conversation to get us to the results we need.
So when you talk about, communication and just being self-reflective, I think that's powerful. But How is it, how can a leader manage the rollout of change? Because I think change is something that's happening a lot in the marketplace. We've had, ChatGPT came out in November last year. It hit record adoption. You have companies that are changing their processes. They're getting rid of like whole departments because they're like, let me just get a prompt engineer and I don't need a writing staff. I personally think that's a mistake, but that's what some people are doing. You have some people who are using ChatGPT as their attorney. So you have other companies who are integrating tools like AI into their daily operations and training their people on it. So with the fast changing of technology in the marketplace, how can leaders effectively and efficiently manage this technological change that's impacting business operations?
Well, one thing that's important, if you mean in the context of working with your team and helping them to adjust to change, is you need to set up the expectation that there's going to be change, right? So there's 7 or 8 steps in the actual change management process, whichever model we want to use, right? But we have to set that
Which
up
model?
to
Not
be
all of us
expected.
went to MBA school now. Come on now. Let's break down the different models of change.
I like to use the Cotter approach, the seven-step Cotter
Cotter
approach.
approach.
Some people, yeah, the John Cotter approach. Some people add 8 steps, I know. Some people add 9 steps. But basically, what that means is, one of the first steps that we take in change is preparing people for change. People are resistant. Only about 20% of people, if even that, really are good with change. Right. And leaders are actually paid to make constant change. So the fact that we are expecting there to be some kind of stagnation or lack of change, if you will, is already a faux pas, right? We need to understand that change is going to happen and we're setting ourselves up and our teams up to go through change, right? The AI thing is tough because it means that companies, like you said, are downsizing, things are changing. And so you have to have the team that you're going to keep if you're downsizing, the team you're going to keep. We have to set them up to understand that there are changes that are going to happen, right? Don't let them be surprised. And then we want to look at, well, what's in it for them? Like, where do they fit in the change? Which is part of the steps of the process. But when you leave people to wonder, when you leave people to, start the rumor wheel, then it starts to cause dissension and people are upset and they're making up narratives and they don't understand what's going to happen,
And then you get
right?
what happened at
So set the
Forget
expectation.
what airport. What airport was that? The lady came back and beat up her boss at Starbucks.
Yeah. Promise. You have to be transparent. Okay? It's hard. If you don't know, you don't know. Don't make up false narratives for people so that they have this hope that there won't be a massive change or a significant change. I think people like honesty. They'd rather you be honest with them.
Right, I agree. I think, change is one of those things that are just it's here to stay, and the pace of change is increasing, and it's something that all leaders have to be prepared to navigate.
Yeah. One of the things that happens when you're honest with your team, things are changing, technology is changing. One of the things I used to do when I worked for other people was, well, then what skill do I need? Right? What do I need to learn so that I can be ready for the change? Right? That's part of the transparency because you'll have people on your team that'll be intimidated by that, and you'll have people on your team that'll be excited by it. And they'll say, okay, well, I'll go out and get whatever I need, whatever I need to be equipped with to be a significant part of this team, a sustainable part of this team. So maybe I should be the one that specializes in understanding the AI tools. And then I'm valuable to my boss, right? But if you communicate change, the people who are going to be along for the change, they'll pick up on that and they'll make the adjustments and pivot.
Absolutely. So Let's talk about the thing that is really just in the headlines. I would say that this has been one of the most prevalent leadership issues of the pandemic and post-pandemic world, and that is DEI, diversity, equity, inclusion. What does diversity, equity, inclusion mean in the business context?
For me, it means aligning with your stated mission, vision, and values. That's what equity and inclusion is. Most organizations, almost all of them, have a vision statement and a mission statement that says that they are focused on community, focused on equity in the workplace. They're creating a better world. You know, all those fluffy vision statements you see on. It's like do what you say, say what you do, right? That's what it is for me. And that's where I usually start with an organization. Hey, we want to make sure that everyone in your organization feels this because you said it already, right? This is what you said. This is who you said you are, right? So, you know, beyond that, in addition to that, I should say, it's about creating the norms in the culture inside of the organization. The standards, the expectations, the values, the accountability, right? It's about embedding those into the practices and policies of the organization so that those values that align with your vision and mission are actually legal, right? Legally binding values that are in your handbook that you have to live out. That's where we want to go. Key performance indicators that are actually standard legal standards inside of your organization. That's where we're headed to. Okay. The challenge with that is always culture. Culture eats strategy for breakfast every day. Culture is always in the way for a lot of organizations that are struggling. I won't say always, maybe some organizations are doing well, but for a lot of the organizations I work with, culture is what's in the way, meaning the practices inside of the organization, the people practices, the behaviors are blocking us from living out the statements that we're making to the world.
So this a company culture that is something that's very intricate because people bring their diverse perspectives to the workplace, and what is allowed to continue in the workplace becomes the culture. So as a leader in your organization, how do you identify what's culture versus what is a standard operating procedure versus an anomaly? How do you know the difference?
Culture is those un is those unspoken undertones and behaviors that happen inside of the organization. They are the intricacies that sort of say, this is how we do things here. This is what we don't say here. They're unwritten. Okay. And they show up in our meetings. They show up in our hiring practices, in our evaluation practices. And the best way to see culture is to look at outcomes. You know, who are we retaining? Right? Who's leaving? What kind of complaints are we getting, right? Who are we promoting? Who are we not promoting? What is the message that's going out or the reputation of your organization out in the world? All of that is telling, very telling of your culture. Okay. Leadership, when you look at executive leadership, very telling of the culture. Is it inclusive? Is it exclusive? You know, all of those are telltales of what's going on in the culture. Okay. People not following standard operations, right? People not following or not aligning again with what the organization states they are and who they state they are. And culture is very, here's the funny thing about culture. It's very obvious, and usually the people who are immersed in the culture don't understand that people from the outside can see your culture. Oftentimes, they think that people can't. It's very obvious, very telling. It shows up in the way that your organization works. And even if it's not exposed initially, it will be eventually. You've seen it in the news several times. It will be exposed.
One culture that I think of distinctly is the culture of the law enforcement across the country. There's certain things that are unspoken that are done that should not be accepted. But when it comes to culture in a business and leadership, like what are the things that leaders should be doing in January 2024 to successfully lead their organization through the headwinds of artificial intelligence, the headwinds of rising wages all over the country? Minimum wages are increasing. You have supply chain disruptions. You have all these things. We have war. This is a presidential year. We have a lot of market forces that are going to affect commerce. So what advice do you have for leaders from, Fortune 500 companies all the way down to, small businesses?
So let me just make sure I don't get lost in the questions. What should we do to shape culture?
To navigate the change as you're leading in 2024.
So here's one of the things that we need. I'm going to go back to what I was saying about living out our vision and mission. I know it sounds like B school 101, but you have to go back to reassess who am I as an organization? Who am I as a leader? What do I want this organization to be? Okay. And then we want to really create the standards, if you will, or the structure that will help us to live that out. And what here's an example of what I mean by that. If you see anything that's out of alignment with who you say you are, then you need to address it quickly. Okay. The people who are working for you or working with you, they see you allowing toxic behaviors, misalignments, contradictions. If you allow it, then you support it or you endorse it, right? So though that's that. So if you want to call it a cultural audit, right, and clean out, then that's what you need to do. Okay, so you need to address infractions quickly. Okay, and take action. Don't just address them. Take action, and make the changes that need to be. And here's the thing: that can feel risky, it can feel costly, but it's going to cost you more, right? In the long run, to keep those behaviors or those misalignments in place. So you have to do what you need to do in the short term to reach your long-term goals. And sometimes that might be that you have to slow down. I like to say it's what you call front load. You do what you need to do up front so that we can work better together in the long term.
Yeah, that makes sense. I recently was approached by a former team member on my team to be rehired, and I was ready to rehire. And in the process of rehiring, the same reasons why they were let go surfaced again. So I just unhired them again because, yeah, it's really not healthy for an organization to have, everybody else adheres to one standard operating procedure and then somebody else wants special treatment. Like the process is a process and everybody has to adhere to it with integrity.
It takes courage. It takes courage. Leadership is courageous, and it can feel like you're isolated. You just want to run your business. So you just want to run you just want to move forward with the work of the team. And now you have to deal with toxic behaviors, right? And sometimes even that takes leaders out of their comfort zone because maybe your conflict resolution style is not direct, and you need to do something that would require you to take a direct approach. Okay. So That's why I say every leader needs a coach as well. You need to be coached, and you also need to be in mastermind sessions, because your colleagues will tell you, no, you need to take care of this right now, or this is what you need to do, or this is how I did it, right?
So
Because the
that's a good
culture.
segue. Why does an executive and business owners, why do they need a leadership coach?
Because it's lonely. It can feel like you're on an island by yourself, like you're an alien and you're having to make these decisions and nobody understands you. It helps you to stay business focused. You need to be in a room with like-minded people that will challenge you to make the decisions that are most healthy for your business. Because you're a human being. And like I said, maybe you everybody has a different conflict resolution style. And if you lead with what we call harmony and you want everybody to get along, then it could cause you to allow toxic behaviors or actions or strategies that are detrimental to the long-term success of the business to continue or to permeate throughout your organization. So we want to make sure that we keep ourselves in alignment, again, using that word again, alignment. It's a big word for me today, I see. Or we want to make sure that we stay on track, right? And so your team, your mastermind team and your coach is going to hold you to your vision. You're going to say, "Well, how does that work with your vision, Z? That seems to be going off the wrong track." And you say, "Oh, aha," right? So, the difference between a coach and a therapist, a lot of people know, the therapist deals with your past behaviors and reconciling trauma and the things that you need to get over, but the coach is about moving forward. So she's only going to let you talk about 2 minutes about woe is me. This is how I feel. It's like, okay, well, what are we going to do about this? Because how are we going to get over that? Because remember, we have this vision here. And last week we said we're going to fire that person. So what's in the way of you firing that person?
Let's talk about that. I mean, you really, I wanted to ask you about this, like hiring and firing. Why is it that people struggle with firing people? Why is this such a hard thing for people to do? And what, how can you do it in a way where you don't have that hesitation?
So here's a few things that I've learned about human beings and about myself. We love beginnings. We love beginnings. Oh my gosh, this is the beginning of a friendship. This is the beginning of a new era in my life. This is the beginning of a marriage, right? It's so exciting. Everything's new and there's all this potential, right? But we don't like endings. We don't like endings. Endings make us depressed. Oh, I have to end this friendship. I have to end this marriage. I have to end this work relationship. Right. First of all, we don't like endings, right? We don't see endings as new beginnings. We do theoretically, but emotionally, it doesn't feel that way, right? So there's this emotional stuff, right? The other thing that we don't do is in the beginning, set up the parameters for the continuation of the relationship. We don't set up the parameters. So I'm hiring you. However, we will not continue this relationship if you don't meet these particular standards. And so that's our agreement from the beginning. So the person has no expectation that they're going to continue on with this relationship with you without conditions. We don't like that word either, but there are conditions for your employment. It's called an employment contract,
Absolutely.
right? And so one of the things that I like to do when I'm telling someone, when I'm coaching someone to be interviewed, right? And I think you heard me say this probably in class before, is ask your future boss, okay? So, in other words, how will you measure my success? How will you measure my success? And then also, how are you going to check in on my success as we go along? Right? So, what's doing when I'm interviewing with you, if I'm the person being interviewed, is I'm trying to see if my boss has a plan and a structured plan for how I'll be successful here. And then what it communicates to the from the boss to the person being interviewed is that I have an expectation for you to meet. Okay. And outside of that expectation, we might not have a relationship. And we don't tend to say that up front beginning when we're starting things. We're just like, welcome to the family. Oh, this is a nice new relationship. This is people always say, I'm gonna love you unconditionally and all that. Okay. You love your children unconditionally. Okay.
The
But there are
children.
conditions, relationships,
Right.
and it needs to be healthy for us. It's con but it's a but it's a good condition in the sense that I want us to have a healthy relationship, a thriving, healthy, profitable relationship, or else all bets are off.
Now, you said something that just made me go, wow. It just made me think, like, there have been some people that have been released to their destiny that I don't want to talk to anymore. And what you're saying, that's okay.
Yeah, it's okay. It for some reason the agreement that you had wasn't kept, or you moved on to a new chapter in your life, right? And sometimes it happens with businesses as well. Like we talked about the fact that we are, right now in a phase where we just finished this Goldman Sachs program. A lot of us are re-evaluating our needs, and it's time for a new chapter. And so it just is, because it's really about the health of your, you didn't get into business for it to fail.
And that's another thing that I wanted to ask you about. How can leadership help a business thrive and be successful?
I mean, everything is leadership. Me and my colleagues that are, I ideate with CEOs all the time, right? That's another thing I like to, because we need to talk to each other, right? Everything leads back to leadership. Everything is about leadership. You set the tone and the culture of the organization. Okay. You are the ones that are, you are the one that is in charge of change. You are the one that is responsible for handling conflict. You're the coach, like the coach of a team, right? We see it, right? We see, failure in the NFL. I'm an Eagles fan, so I'm on this whole trip about our leadership right now. It's not good, right? So you can have a talented group, and all of a sudden they tank because poor leadership, right? So it goes back to it's just the foundation of everything. Your style, your ability to pivot, your ability to know when change needs to happen, your ability to know when you need to bring someone on the team, your ability to know when you need to take someone off, your ability to know when you need to mastermind, when you need to make a quick decision and when you can let a decision sit. It's not perfection, but leadership is about leaning in, listening, reading the environment, the room, if you will, understanding change externally and internally. Everything is goes back to leadership. It's like even with the family, the leadership, the parents are the leadership. We see it.
Yeah, I think leadership is really fascinating, and I think when it comes to building a company or just any size company, leadership is something that isn't really talked about a lot at all.
Yeah, because it's funny. I was just going to say that when you think about starting an organization or joining a team, the all of the psychology that goes into being a leader, because you're working with people, it's not taught.
Yeah, I
It's
remember
not taught.
when I was in at the Sloan School, I did learn this. You'll be proud of me. I learned that the way a group forms is they have three steps. They form, they storm. No, four steps. They form, they storm, they norm, and then they perform. I did learn that. And
I
so
love it.
we formed, we've had some stormy times. We've normalized some processes. We had to put processes in place. Now the team's performing. So it
Right.
works. I see it in my own organization.
What we also don't learn is that everything in leadership has to do with four quadrants of emotional intelligence. People don't learn emotional intelligence. And here's the thing about emotional intelligence, which is your ability to self-regulate, right? And to be aware of your organ, your environment rather, and the needs of the people around you, right? So what people don't learn is that everything goes back to you having the ability to manage your emotions. Okay. And the first part is awareness. So self-awareness. Am I aware of who I am? What triggers me? Right. What style am I used to? What challenges me, right, in terms of a leader? Am I able to manage my emotions? So now I'm aware of it and I'm triggered. What do I do with it? Do I scream and holler? Or, is that the way I was taught to manage my emotions as I grew up as a child? Right? Is that going to be appropriate here? Right? Is that going to be appropriate here in this space? Leads us to the third quadrant, okay, which is organizational and environmental awareness. Is it appropriate for me to say this on this podcast with Z, or is it not? Like, what is the environment here, right? And then the fourth is others' awareness. How is what I'm saying going to make Z feel? And is what I'm saying going to get the result I want from her? Right? So the two main areas are self-awareness, right? And then others. So self and others. Self-awareness, self-management, organizational or environmental awareness, and others' awareness. And people don't typically think about that has to constantly be going on in your head as a leader. I'm getting ready to have this meeting with this person that's coming and that's giving me a problem. Okay. What do I know about myself? Okay, in terms of why I don't like this, the behavior she's been exuding.
Right.
Okay. How am I going to manage my feelings about that? What do I know about her in terms of how I need to speak to her?
Right.
Okay. What am I communicating about what she needs to do in this organization in order to have an effective conversation?
Right. That's I really think the self-awareness, the self-reflection, the self-improvement is huge. It's so huge because I think for me, when I get tempted to be upset about something going on in my team, I always self-reflect because I know myself. And I know that it's so important for before I, come down hard on somebody, have all the facts. And context, facts and context is very important. And as leaders, you're right. Our mind is going in so many different directions. There have been times I thought I sent something to a team member and did not. And so that's why we have all these paper trails. We can audit and see what really did happen. And that I think that's really important for to avoid miscommunication.
Well, one of the things that's really important is knowing, in terms of, like you said, for example, if you know that sometimes you get super busy, right? You're doing some self-reflection. You're like, okay, this is an area where I made a mistake. I need somebody to check in on this with me. For me, it's like my schedule. I'm going to mess up my schedule. I know that's who I am, right? That's self-awareness. I have someone there that helps me with that, right? Helps me manage that. I'm not trying to be all the things. But I do know I need to fill in some of the gap, right, for myself. And so that's getting you. So when you're really mature, and the other thing I want to say about self-reflection and checking in is we are all, in this country, considered Western culture. We have been taught that mistakes, failures, faux pas or whatever you want to call them are a no-no, right? So a lot of times people don't want to self-reflect. They don't want to get feedback. They haven't been taught to receive feedback. Been taught they're supposed to be perfect.
That's I look at my children and I look at my team, and sometimes I'll learn something one area, I'll apply it over here and vice versa, because to me, like my son, he doesn't like making mistakes, and
Yeah,
to
it's
him that it's
like this
okay
myth of.
has been something I've been engaging in.
This myth of perfection, right?
Right.
The teacher asks you to raise your hand and you want to get it right and you're embarrassed in the class if you didn't, right? We've learned it from the time we were children. This
Right.
myth of conformity and perfection. right?
Conformity and
The teacher didn't
perfection.
say, oh my gosh, the teacher doesn't say, oh my gosh, this is an opportunity to learn. You know, I expect you all, I'd rather you be wrong than, you know, I think more teachers are trying to do that kind of stuff now, but that's not how we grew up. That's not what we learned. We learned this myth of perfection. And so what was really surprising to me is when I was first out of undergrad, I worked at Johnson & Johnson. And I worked in the I've been in diversity for my entire career. I worked in the diversity recruiting department, and we traveled around the country helping managers to bring diverse talent into the organization. Everything that we did, we debriefed, we reflected. We said, what can we do better? How could we have done this better this year, this season? And that was part of the culture. That was part of our team culture, to debrief, to create a safe space where we could you know, all look at what we did and help us be better next year. And you know, that's when I took that with me as a young professional. Every organization I worked with since then, nobody would debrief and reflect. And I would be saying, aren't we going to talk about like how Q1 went, how we could do better? And they're like, oh no, we don't need to talk about it. We don't need to talk about that, because they didn't feel psychologically safe. And I said, that's this self-reflection is learned. It's a learned behavior. I learned it in my early career. It was part of my norm. People are afraid to even give feedback among, you know, at work, even in a team, you know, in a way that, because they take it as an indictment against their performance. So
So
everybody's trying to.
I honestly I can admit that it was scary for me to ask my team for feedback. It was scary for me, but I did it because I really wanted to know. Because it's important for me, for my team members to enjoy where they're working, because they're spending a good portion of their day working. So it actually wasn't that scary to get that feedback.
And it's all about how you frame it as well. It doesn't have to be, what am I doing wrong? It's like, what more do you need from me? What else would you like to see? You know, how would you work better here? How can I, you know, and then they would just tell you or write it down, right? But the fact that we are not used to receiving feedback, or that we kind of like have this cultural bias against it, is something that has been embedded in us. And that kind of stuff fascinates me in my work. I try to look at, you know, what, why do we have these psychological barriers to, for example, we talked about change earlier. Why do we have these psychological barriers to equity and inclusion? There's something more. It's always something more there. Atul Gawande wrote the book, The Checklist Manifesto. I don't know if you have ever gotten a chance to read that, but basically, Atul is a physician who came up with a checklist process to be used in the United States in operating rooms, because there was a high death rate, higher than third world countries, on the operating table. And it was because the authority in the room, the doctor, wanted to be the Mr., you know, the highest paying person, and supposed to be the smartest person and all that. And so there wasn't effective checklist. And so he took the process from the military, I believe it was the Air Force, and applied it to hospitals. So that in the operating room, there's a checklist process, and everybody can use it. So the nurse can call the doctor, or the anesthesiologist. Everybody has the checklist, and nobody is above anybody in the room. And it's the same box, right? And I was like, wow. And here's what else is fascinating about that. It took him a long time to convince the hospitals to even try it, because he had to get through what I say earlier, culture eats strategy for breakfast all day. He had to get through the culture, even get them to try a valid, proven military process. They didn't want to try it. So the book is fascinating. I read it years ago, and I always refer back to, you know, this stuff is so deeply embedded. So the equity and inclusion stuff I teach, and you know, it is all leadership. It all goes back to leadership,
It's
right?
fascinating.
It all comes to.
All right, Levada, it has been a pleasure ch chatting with you about leadership. So I want to know, how can our listeners connect with you?
Yes, so a few things. I am, as you mentioned before, the incoming president for the state of California for the National Association for Women's Business Owners. So check out NABO, NAWBO. I also have a children's book called Kyla Believes that I wrote that I'm proud of. You can catch that on Amazon. I am also doing some work, and I just want to put in a little shameless plug with pay equity for the state of California with the governor's group. So we're doing some pay equity work for the on the California Commission on the State of Women. So I'm excited
That's
about
awesome.
doing that
That's awesome.
with our first partner. Yeah, I'm excited about doing that work with our first partner. And then you can check out my website, Bright Places. That's www.brgtplaces.com. That's where you'll see that we've sort of put together our hub where you can see me and my team and the work we do. And I'm excited to be working with you, Z, as we enhance our outreach to
Oh,
do better work in the
absolutely.
community.
Well, you know, I'm really excited about working with you as well. And I really recommend for our listeners, especially those who are using AI in their organization, to tap into the resources at Bright Places so that your culture won't eat your strategy for breakfast.
Yum, yum. Love the taste. Culture is like, bring on that strategy. Yeah, show it up. Spit it out.
Yeah, so I think this is a really important conversation for us to continue and definitely tap into the Algorithm magazine, because we will be sharing more of LaVeda English's thought leadership on that platform around leadership. So you have been listening to the SEO Queen Tech Show. This is a podcast to help you get more credibility, visibility, and profitability through business strategy, marketing insight, search engine optimization, and all things business and technology. This podcast is for entrepreneurs and businesses of all sizes. We are broadcast worldwide on Bashadi Radio, iHeartRadio, and iTunes. Bashadi Radio, always talking about everything from New York City. You can listen to the SEO Queen Tech Show on any mobile phone or tablet device. Also, please follow us online at SEOQueen.com and all social networks at The SEO Queen. That's THESEOQUEEN. And again, today my guest has been the CEO and founder of Bright Places, LaVeda English. And you can connect with her website at brgtplaces.com. That's brgtplaces.com. So thank you so much for listening, and until next time.
It's time to grow with the SEO Queen. Get visibility like never before. The traffic's gonna explode. It's time to grow with the SEO Queen. Receive the perfect leads like never before. The traffic's gonna explode. It's time to grow.
100% owned and operated. Bashani Radio App. They said we couldn't do it, and we did it anyway. The hottest independent network in the world.
Kaboom!
Kaboom! Kaboom.